Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Faith Church Podcast. I'm your host, Jay Williams. Joining me today is another host, Jeff Clossy.
Hey, Jay. Good morning, man.
How's it going?
Great. Good to be with you.
Is it?
Yeah.
Why are we talking in monotone?
Are we?
Yeah, there was a little bit of that. I think you mimicked me.
Oh. I patterned my voice after yours.
Oh. So if I start, it started to remind me of like Bob Dylan, because I've been doing a lot of like, hey, man.
I knew that was coming.
Because we watched A Complete Unknown last week.
Oh, I was told that I should watch that by someone else.
It's good. It's interesting. I was like a kid. I was a kid that grew up and I heard a Bob Dylan song and I really liked him. So I would listen to him a lot. And then I would listen to some of his later stuff. And then by the 90s, like he sounds like the caricature of, didn't you? And you're like,
so does someone in the movie, like, so I haven't seen it. Does someone actually do his singing?
Yeah, Timothée Chalamet. Okay. He does the whole thing. Wow. He learned it.
Pretty convincing.
He does a great job.
That's
just
cool.
Really impressive. But here's my point. I didn't know. You forget when you're younger, when you didn't grow up, and if you didn't listen to Bob Dylan the whole way through, you kind of forget that he at one point sang in a way that you could actually kind of understand him.
Yeah.
Like he wasn't always like, so you're listening to it and going, oh, so I went back and listened to some of his early stuff and I'm going, oh, I can kind of understand. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's never been the most accented or articulate singer. That's never going to be his thing, but it's fascinating.
Cool.
So as we were starting to speak in monotone.
I'm glad that you pulled out your impersonation of it. That's a relief.
That and Eddie Vedder. Those are my two. Robbie always said that they just morph into each other, that they're basically the same impression. Just one's a little like, it just goes a little bit higher.
That'd be a really funny question in an interview to Eddie Vedder. So have you always been compared to Bob Dylan's
voice? Have you ever noticed that you are just a deeper Bob Dylan for your voice? That's so good. Yeah. And you also mocked me this morning. So we started off really strong by you being passive aggressive and pointing out that because I'm wearing my Cubs jersey today.
You so had me lost there.
I know.
I'm happy to own that.
I wish
one.
We had the video. I wish.
What did I say to him that he's going to now say to everyone to hear? Yes. Yesterday, the Brewers and Cubs were supposed to have a doubleheader, but the Cubs lost so badly in the first one that they forfeited the second one and postponed it till today.
They made it rain. They made it rain and rained it. If they forfeited it, they wouldn't be replaying it, Jeff.
Oh, okay.
So your story falls apart. There's holes in your story. Yeah, so here I am in enemy territory. I wore a Cubs jersey today because I thought like they need me.
Yeah, they do.
We went last week. Lauren and I went on a little anniversary getaway down to Chicago, and we went to a Cubs game. We went to the Cubs game the day that they had the air show. So if you haven't seen this, you need to look it up on YouTube. But on Friday, last Friday and Saturday, but Friday was the worst day. They had this big air show, like the, down there. And so these F-16s or F-15s, like whatever, these fighter jets are like flying over the stadium doing these flyovers during the game.
I didn't hear
and
about
so,
this.
So like on Friday, there's this great clip of the dugout where all the players in the dugout just dive for cover. Like it was loud. And I happened to be recording it during the seventh inning stretch where the biggest one, I mean, it was so low and they flew right over the stadium and it just, everyone jumped like during the seventh inning stretch during the song, which that was fine and it was funny and everyone's laughing and cheering and everything, but the players started to get pretty annoyed. Like there was a time on Saturday where a player took a strike three, like a fastball right down the middle because a plane flew over right there and you see him just kind of flinch and then he can't swing, you know, and you're just like, this is their livelihood and this is all this stuff. And you know,
so do they think that those were Brewer fans or?
Well, this was when they were playing the Pirates.
Oh, okay.
The Cubs can't even beat the Pirates right now. This is how bad it is. Man, on Friday they lost, and all Lauren wanted to do was sing "Go Cubs, Go," and they failed.
Oh man, so, I'm sorry, Lauren.
This is a good plug. Good time to plug our spinoff podcast, which is MLB Weekly, where Jeff and I will be discussing all the latest news, all the action, trade deadline news, pennant race. Everything.
I think we could do Wait, we are. You're saying we already are doing this, or we're going to
do? We're going to launch it. I'm announcing it right now. We are launching the new MLB Weekly, the Faith Church MLB.
MLB
podcast.
Meets MLS in a podcast like no other. That would be so great. Because I have no baseball expertise.
That'll hit our area really well. The MLS podcast will definitely. We definitely know our target. Well, speaking of knowing our target,
should we talk about
running a race?
Yes.
That would have been a better transition.
We blew that. Well, no one ever
three,
know. Let's
two,
rewind it.
One. Speaking of athletic endeavors, we got to continue the metaphor of race. I like that you're giving me thumbs up like I'm actually going to cut that out. I'm not cutting that out.
I thought what you just did there was perfect.
It was. Thank you. It was. But I'm still not editing out that other part. So anyway, we continue on the race theme going through Hebrews. And it was kind of fun because one of the things that was strange about this one was the first two verses of the passage I preached, 12 and 13, are pretty much the conclusion to the section that you preached. And so it sometimes when you're preaching through a passage, it's hard to know where to divide it, right? Because sometimes there's going to be some overlap. But maybe you felt cheated that you didn't get to talk. I mean, did you talk about 12 and 13?
I didn't.
No, you didn't.
And I think I actually was thinking too, it's this chapter in particular, well, 11 and 12 both. It's really a pretty extended unpacking of important truth for our life. So it's been neat that we've been able to get at it from a number of different angles each week. And even how it overlapped. I felt it more a couple weeks ago. Like I felt like I could have gone 1, 2, and 3 and we stopped at 2. But I think it's beautiful the way we're doing it because we are getting time to focus. And you know, you focused a lot this week. The two things that really stood out to me, Jay, were this call to holiness, this call to, and I love it. You defined it like sanctification is the process of growing in holiness. But then that is not an individual endeavor. It's a team sport. And I'll tell you the illustration that really stuck with me was we can fall into, because of cultural norms and just the way things are, we can fall into treating church like personal trainers that we go to for help that have expertise in certain areas and we go to other ones for other help. That really rang true for me. And I really appreciate it. I'm curious for you, that contrast between we're on a team together and you made the joke. Maybe you wish you were on a different team, which I was laughing as I was listening to it. But I think that the reality is God has arranged, and you know that too, God has arranged the team that we're on, but we do treat it differently, right? We often can think of it like, I like this personal trainer and what they offer me, and then I like that one better. And so I go there for that. But we're really supposed to be together in this.
Yeah, I mean, imagine. Yeah, I also, you know, was talking about a restaurant, going into a restaurant, and that we judge other restaurant goers just by whether they kind of ruin our time. Like we don't really think about them as, you know, like as part of a team together. It's an individual thing that you happen to enjoy doing this individual thing. You know, I could have used other things like. I think deer hunting is a lot like that. I mean, you might have a family, like a father and a son or whatever that go, but if there's another deer blind, like down the road, you're not planning on like teaming up and, you know, cornering a deer or something. Like you're just like, you're each individually out there fishing same way. Like you can be out on the river with other people, but you're all, as long as they don't ruin your time, you don't really care. You'd probably prefer they're not out there, but if they're out there, that's fine. But just imagine anybody that's played a team sport. Imagine if you said to the coach, I don't want to go out there with Johnny. Like I'll go out there and I'll play with anybody else, but I'm not playing with him. You know, unless you are the Michael Jordan of that team. Now, unfortunately, there are players who can do that, but we wouldn't say that that's a positive. Like if you hear about a star player like refusing to play with other people or being out there with other people, you would think, oh, they're selfish and arrogant and self-centered. It's not a positive thing, but we kind of tend to do that in the church, especially when we pick and choose. So I'm using that example to say, you know, I will say, oh, I like some of the people at the church, so I'll hang out with some of the people at the church, but then these other people I avoid. which is just not understanding the whole thing. And then like what you were talking about, bouncing around, that we saw this a lot in Denver. Now, obviously, you know, in a smaller area where we don't have as many churches, it's not as common, but in bigger areas, but that root desire is still in there, mm-hmm. and it still does happen, funny enough.
And I think sometimes now it can happen virtually.
Oh yeah.
You know, like
that's a good point.
Where you Touché. Don't actually have to leave your living room to do that.
Yeah. Oh, virtually opens up a whole other can of worms, which I hadn't even been thinking about that, but thanks for discouraging me here in this moment. I'm sitting here thinking like, oh, that was more of a problem. Cause like in Denver,
in an urban center, right?
Well, right. In Denver, it would happen a lot where somebody would say, oh, I love the Sunday morning worship at this church. And so I go there on Sunday, but I'm in a small group in this church over here. And I go on missions trips with this other church over here. And then this other church has this young adults group that I really like. And the thing is that people did that because they saw Christianity as an individual pursuit. And I would argue that the reason they felt that way is because as a church, we kind of treat it that way. Mm-hmm. And so it's hard to blame, you know, a 25-year-old who has been kind of raised in the church that's so focused on their own like personal development and not even necessarily spiritual formation, but just like your own personal growth in a world that so emphasizes just your own personal growth and getting a mentor for this over here and reading this book over here. And that of course we kind of lost the idea of community and doing this as a family.
Yeah. Church becomes then like it's primarily an institution or an organization that provides a set of goods and services that I like and consume.
Yeah, so how would you, if you knew somebody that was struggling with that, how do you identify it? What are some key questions that we should be asking to make sure that we're thinking about church in the right way? Because even as I said it, I was thinking in my head, it's not that preaching doesn't matter. Like you and I both work hard on sermons. We want them to be engaging. I want people to be able to follow me. I'm not just going to get up there and speak off the cuff in a really kind of boring way. That's not my desire at all. But at the same time, that's not how we should be judging a church or how we should be evaluating how we're doing as a church based on just how many people show up. You know, and I mentioned all those things of like numbers and teaching the Bible. And that's a whole other thing, talking about the bitter root, which we can get to. If you want to know, like, well, man, is that me? Am I doing that? Am I being a consumer at church? What would you say?
Yeah, well, I think asking that question is the first step, right? That's so important. Part of the challenge with it is that it's all the things we engage in our life are shaping us and forming us. Like, it's not just when we intentionally are trying to make the pursuit of training in Christlikeness, like we've been talking about. Everything we do shapes us in some way, and everything in our culture is bent towards, is leaning towards that we are consumers, right? And everything is a marketing attempt, like, you know, the mail you get every day, the things you're hearing while you're listening to the ball game, it's all marketing because you consume things and that's what's important. So I think for all of us, we have to like just acknowledge that we've already been formed towards that direction. That's going to be our natural normal way of functioning now. So we have to take some proactive steps to shift out of that when we approach church family and participation in church, to think of it in a different category. I mean, we already do that, I think, when we read the Bible. So like, we don't read Romans and compare it to some fiction book that we read and say, I really like these fiction books better, so I'm not going to read the Bible anymore. Like, we know, like, we really need to read it, even if it's a different, it doesn't do for us what maybe some fantasy thing does. I don't know if that's the best analogy, Jay, but I do think that in some categories, we already do know that. And it doesn't mean, like what you said, it doesn't mean that like we just do off-the-cuff preaching and we just wing it. No, we take careful, prayerful time to prepare. But that isn't like, the way we measure that isn't our satisfaction with what we hear. I guess maybe that's part of what it is. I think we were involved, so when we were, Jess and I were newly married, living in Milwaukee. We were at a larger church that had multiple different worship teams, and each worship team had their own like style. of leading, right? And so one was more of like a like gospel choir type style. There was one that was a bit jazzy, and they the way that they led was according to the wiring of the group. And I remember so clearly being in my, you know, early 20s still, the pastor getting up one day and saying, "You may have noticed if you've been here for a while that we have different styles of worship music." And that's a really good thing, because chances are you're not going to like all of them. And that's such a good thing for you to realize and to feel that this worship time is not about you. It's about Jesus and us coming together under him. And just that word to me as a young person was so helpful just to shift it internally, to be like, maybe the most important question isn't how do I feel about this? Because I do think that's what leads to some of the personal trainer mentality or restaurant mentality, because that's what we ask about those things, right? What do I feel about this? And there's a bigger question to ask.
Yeah, I would say that when I look back, some of the more formative times in my life were sitting under preaching that I did not actually enjoy. This sounds weird,
mm-hmm.
but it made me confront the idea of, do I believe that this, that the role of a preacher in a given context is to shepherd and care for the church family and to feed the sheep? Well, then I need to receive this and trust that the Holy Spirit then has me here and he's going to do something in it. And so the discipline of that. So that happened with preaching. It also happened with music. I was in a church for a while where I did not connect with the music at all. It was not at all the style. And that's when I started to learn. And that was really even me growing up. I used to count how many songs there were, how many that I would have to suffer through. And I started listening to the words. So I started thinking, okay, but God, you have something for me here. So I'm going to stop worrying about the style of music and I'm going to start really meditating on the words. And that was very formative to me. And what it reminds me of is, yeah, just to use that restaurant metaphor a little bit more, it's, you know, when you pick a restaurant, if you're just going out by yourself to go grab lunch, you're going to go wherever you get what you want. The combination of food, price, time for you, you're going to go, you're not worrying about what, you know, what Jess wants or what your kids want or whatever. Like it's that. But if you're going together as a family, that's different. Mm-hmm. And then if you're going over to, you know, your dad's house for a dinner, that's even more different. So like if you're going out by yourself, all that matters is what you want, what you connect with, what you enjoy. If you're going with your family, there's kind of a collective thing of, okay, well, what's the best thing for all of us? What's the what's kind of the sweet spot? But when you're going over to have a family dinner at a family member's house, the last thing you're worried about is what's being served. Or you know, like if you go hungry, you're hoping there's food. And so there's a communication of that. Most family dinners, like if grandma is hosting a family dinner and she's cooking, she wants to make a good meal. Like if my dad has us over he's going to make a good meal. He's going to do the best he can. He doesn't want us to starve. He doesn't want us to eat undercooked chicken. You know, like that doesn't, there's a desire there, but it's not how you evaluate that time together. You evaluate it based on the relationships and the communal effect. And so I would say that one of the ways to push through it is to actually thank God for those times where you say, man, this is not my favorite song, or wow, Jay's really not on today. He's struggling, which, you know, happens. And to say, okay, well, God, what do you have for me in this? And, you know, like if there's a song you don't like, for example, really meditate on the words.
Mm-hmm.
You might actually, there have been songs that I didn't like until I meditated on the words, and then they became one of my favorite songs because it just changes perspective. There have been sermons in my life that nobody else probably would have said, oh, that was his best sermon or whatever, and that I'm listening to, but it hit me
mm-hmm.
in a way because I'm engaging and I'm saying, okay, God, I believe you have something for me. That's why you have me here in this space in this moment, and to believe this is not just a TED talk I signed up for. Like you brought me here in this moment.
Yeah, and I'm united to these people, you know, by the work of Jesus and his Spirit. And so there's something
eternally true about our relationship. And that doesn't mean that we're always, you know, we move. There's changes sometimes to the body of believers we're connected with. But I think that's the big difference. And I love that you brought in then the fruit of the Spirit. I was just so struck by that and how important that is as we think about our participation in the church, and then the church as we think about if we move to a new place, like you gave the example of a student moving to a new location. What do we think about? How do we evaluate it? And I just love that you said the fruit of the Spirit. And I was thinking about how amazing and what a gift it is that God chose to reveal to us very specifically what the fruit of the Spirit is. You know what I mean? So we don't have to guess. We can open the Bible, like you, and you quoted Galatians 5, right? And we can look at the life of Jesus and his example as well. And what was he like? And what did he teach? And what did he model? But I think that is so important as we think about what does it look like to pursue him together. It needs to be producing the fruit of the Spirit in us.
Yeah, well, you know, what's funny about that is I originally had written that section focusing on a different theme. Because I don't know about you, but I think most of the time that I've heard about root of bitterness, it's more about a personal, like a root of bitterness in my heart.
Like relational.
Up. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't know so hear me, because I actually had somebody after the service say, like, I'd always heard it as this of like not letting bitterness get a hold of your life. That is definitely a true thing. And given that he says strive, I think the reason why we think of it that way, even for pastors who are preaching it, and the reason why I thought of it that way is because the author just says, be at peace with everyone. Strive for peace with everyone. And so there's this like communal thing. But then he talks about the root of bitterness. But so I'd kind of written this section about, okay, how do you fight against, how do we communally fight against the root of bitterness? How do we make sure? And then I had a whole section on giving thanks and the importance of communally giving thanks. And then some of the other themes we've talked about of like the difference, a little quick thing about lament versus grief, because I think we can't mention that enough, because mm-hmm. every time we talk about that, I think it's just so under talked about that, you know, anytime we have an opportunity to say grief and lament can be very godly things and are godly things, we know because Jesus grieves and laments. So that is a God honoring thing. But complaining and bitterness and negativity are not. Mm-hmm. We never see Jesus walking around being pessimistic. You know, like we never see him walking around just being negative, and we see him grieving and lamenting. So anyway, I had that whole section, and then I'm just digging into that passage more and just wanting to like dig into it, knowing, especially with Hebrews, how often it's really going back to the Old Testament. And then you realize, oh, wait, this isn't about that. This is about the bitter root that produces this poisonous fruit of apostasy, that it was this charge in the Old Testament to keep people from going after other gods, and then making people feel at peace that they can do that, that they can do both, that they can merge these cultures, or that they can mesh these things together, that you can serve God and money, you can serve God and manna at the same time. And once I saw that and realized, oh, that's really what it's talking about, well, then that opens the gates as far as like, man, that is there a bigger issue in our culture than that idea that I can serve two masters. Mm-hmm. I can have both. And that is especially, I didn't mention this directly, I did a little bit of the consumerism in our culture. But in a country where it is normal to be a Christian, and even in many places still very advantageous to be a Christian, and at least culturally that's a lot of people's background. So that's what I mean by normal. And people could push back and say, well, but you know, it's not as normal as it used to be. Yeah, it's still probably the most, like, Christianity is probably in the United States is more normal than probably in any other country. So the question is then, okay, then how do we guard against that root that would basically produce that fruit? Mm-hmm. And so then whenever you're talking about fruit, like, okay, then what fruit is it supposed to? And then that's when I, you know, obviously think about the Sermon on the Mount and Jesus' warning. Like there are people who are going to sound good. Like that's the whole point of that passage. Like it's not, hey, watch out for these outsiders who are going to come in and try to attack you. That's never the warning. Peter also warns about this. Like the warnings in scripture about wolves are always from within. They're saying from among you will rise up these wolves and these false teachers. Paul warns of this. Peter warns of this. Jesus warns of this. And yet we continue to just be blissfully ignorant to any sensitivity to that within the church. And we just think of all the attacks coming from the outside. And so trying to figure out, okay, well, how do we combat that? And then also really wanting to make it clear that the way we combat that is not by policing and judging and being harsh and condemning people. That isn't it. It's by pursuing Christ so radically that we develop a culture that where that's the norm, that we pick up our cross and that you can look around and see people who are radically denying themselves and following Jesus and showing what that looks like and calling others to do the same. That's how you guard against that, I think, but I don't know.
Well, it's complicated because I think sadly even church culture reinforces the opposite, right? Like it reinforces that other things, even if we say, actually, it's not that important, but it's what gets talked about. So here's a couple examples. So I don't know the answer to these questions, but you could find them. What is the largest church in America? You know, so you're talking about counting people. What is the fastest growing church in America? You could find all of these things, right? These are written about, these are focused on, and these are gone after. It doesn't mean that those metrics don't matter. There is a point to them, but they can be way overemphasized and chased after. And but where do you read the article that says which church in America is producing and do you find the most loving, gracious, humble servants of Jesus? Where is that happening? Like, just think about that article. Like, and I get that some of it is you can quantify numbers in a way that it's difficult to quantify the fruit of the Spirit. Yeah, I get that. But that aside, those aren't the things that are focused on in our even Christian media about the church. That is not the emphasis. And so I think that's why what you said on Sunday and why what we're going through in Hebrews right now is so important for all of us to just take heart in our own church family here and to be on guard against and to steer away from, is because everything around us, it just does feel like is going after something that Jesus never lists as the thing. And the Gospels never list. And the fruit of the Spirit are different than those things. Right. And I love, you know, I have to quote Willard, sorry, but he says, stop counting and start weighing. So don't count people, but weigh them. What are they made up of? And are they more and more like Jesus? That's how you know if your church is doing what Christ has called our church to do. Right. And so as you were preaching that, Jay, my heart was just feeling like, yes. And I feel like we all have a tendency though, to have other things in mind that we might say they're secondary, but they can be elevated because of the attention they get to be primary. And we just have to be on guard against that in our church body.
Yeah, and here's a couple of examples. You mentioned numbers, and I talk about this at seminary with young pastors, and we talk about measuring the right things, and that there are, and I've mentioned it here before too, that there are indicators and then there's actual fruit. Mm-hmm. And you never want to confuse them. And where most churches get into trouble is when you confuse those things. So for example, attendance is a really easy one. I don't know of a pastor who loves Jesus and wants to preach the gospel who doesn't want more people to come to know him. Mm-hmm. That's a godly desire to want more people. Jesus says, the harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few. Pray earnestly that God would send out, the Lord of the harvest would send out workers. So we're supposed to pray for that. We want that to happen, but numbers don't mean the fruit of changed lives. And when you confuse those, then all of a sudden the target starts shifting. And so then the means start shifting. And so now I don't worry. You imagine a church that just says, well, yeah, like what we want is, yeah, we want more people to know Jesus. That means we want more people in here. How do we get more people in here? What? It doesn't take long to see how now you were asking the wrong questions. The question isn't how do we get more people in here. The question is, how do we more effectively share the gospel? And so that's, those are different questions. It happens with programs. Churches notoriously determine the success. The two biggest things that that churches will determine the success of a program over are attendance and what people's initial reactions are to the event or the program. That those are disproportionate in their weight. But the real thing that we should be measuring is, what are the effects of it? Do we see the fruit of the Spirit? Do we see people pursuing Jesus together? We've weighed this out with our men's and women's conferences. They're well attended, and people always say, like, what a great time it was. But the question is, like, do we see the men in our church becoming more loving, more kind, more patient? And that's not all hinged on the men's conference, but I think about, like, your how people change course. Mm-hmm. That's another good example. Really well attended, and people stayed with it. A lot of commitment. People really enjoyed it. A lot of really neat stories that came from it. Those are all good indicators. But the actual fruit is what's happening in those people's lives over the next year, over the next two. It's never gonna be perfect. We're never gonna say, like, oh, well, you know, this person left the church, and so therefore that course was worthless. But there should be a mark of when you start noticing, man, the people who've taken that course have just become more loving, more kind, more patient, more gentle. Like, we just see them growing in that. Okay, well, now we can say that's been really fruitful. When we did communion the way that we did, it wasn't about how did people feel about it at first. It wasn't about how smoothly it ran. It was, we started asking the question of, okay, what's the fruit that we're seeing? And over time, we started seeing people praying for one another, connecting more in the service. We started hearing people saying, I want to be there with the family, like to take communion with the family. Like that's fruit. That's mm-hmm. what we want. Not just kind of the feeling in the moment. Our music, like, how do you measure if the music is good or not? When Robbie was shifting our culture of music here over time, and working so hard to do that and enduring so much to do that, how do you measure the fruit? Well, the fruit is, like, are people singing? But that's still even an indicator. But what is the heart around that? Are we seeing this time of worship? Is it softening our hearts? Is it making us more inclined to hear from the Spirit? Do we sense, like, people loving each other as they're singing over one another? Is there, like, a gentleness in that? And there is, like, now we can see that. And that's way better than just the immediate feeling that comes, you know, from a certain song or anything. So I could give a million different examples of this, but yes, if I think the way you guard against that idea of, like, kind of splitting the kingdom or thinking that we can live in two kingdoms is by going all in, like saying we are a church that's just, it's all or nothing. You know, I've said before, like, what I really want on Sunday morning is people who are all in with Jesus and people who don't know yet if they, like, that, who know that they aren't all in with Jesus and are seeking. But I think the greatest disservice we can do in the church is making people feel like to be at peace with their divided kingdom. And that's the warning that comes back in Deuteronomy. Like, that's the danger. That's the sad emphasis of that paragraph is they basically live in these two kingdoms, but they're at peace. And that's the scariest thing. And I just feel like in the church, we've just been so tempted because our desire to build numbers and because of our desire to, like, to feel like we're doing enough for the kingdom, we end up making people who are divided feel at peace. And I don't want to do that. I want people who are divided or people who are not following Jesus to feel welcomed, mm-hmm. to feel loved, to feel wanted here, to, but I don't want them to feel at peace. Like, I don't know.
No,
does that make sense?
No, it does. I'm just agreeing with you. I feel like that would not be loving, right? And there's a reason that Jesus didn't allow people to sit in that either, right? It's because of where it leads. You cannot serve two masters. He gave the example of it will either be God or money, but we know there's all kinds of potential idols like that where our heart can be, I don't know if it's like it just grows accustomed to and somehow it's comfortable with some sort of peace agreement between those two kingdoms, but there is never a peace agreement, right? It's, I will either follow Jesus or not. And, you know, hopefully this goes without saying from both of us, but that doesn't mean that any one of us has arrived. It doesn't mean that we're not in the process of growing in Christ-likeness. The whole point of emphasizing that is that we haven't yet. But it is that, what is our trajectory? Where are we headed? What are we after when we are together as a church family? And then we're out in the world together as a church family. What is our emphasis? And it's Jesus, right? It's him. It's his kingdom. It's his ways. And we together turn from all the ways that are not of him. And that is not an easy thing. I mean, this passage gives some specific examples that are super difficult for so many of us to deal with. And that's, again, an emphasis of like why we need to do this together, because we cannot. You might be able to increase your pace, your mile pace by just training alone. But the kind of transformation that we're called into requires family around you to support. We all need it, you and I included.
Yeah, and I also would say it doesn't mean, and I kind of touched on this earlier, but it doesn't mean that, especially, so when I was talking about the different leaders, and I was talking about leaders, but it's also someone after church made the point of, but that's for all of us. So when I say that leaders of like, well, he's a jerk, but teaches the Bible, or he's done some miraculous works, or he has really sound doctrine, culturally, that is a problem, that it speaks to our celebrity culture. It speaks to all kinds of things. But the number of times that I've heard people say that, and I'm like, what? But Jesus says that disqualifies it. Paul says that disqualifies it. That's not an add-on. That's not a, well, we're really glad that that you teach the Bible, and it would be nice if you were a little kinder. But, you know, no, Scripture's pretty clear that those are disqualifiers. But that doesn't mean that the other isn't also a disqualifier, right? So it is important to teach sound doctrine. It's really important to handle the word of God well. So, you know, the pushback I've gotten in the past, which I understand, is, so you're just saying like what matters most in a church is that people are nice to each other? Like, doesn't matter what they're preaching? No, I'm not saying that any more than I'm saying that, you know, that because I talk to a husband about being kind and gentle and loving towards his wife, that I'm not saying that faithfulness, you know, matters. Because I've heard, I've heard people say like, well, I'm basically a good husband because I've been faithful. Okay, well, you're also kind of a jerk, you know, you're not very patient. We would say like that, okay, but that doesn't qualify as like, you know, being a great husband. And I feel that we need to make sure that when we say we emphasize something, that doesn't mean we're tearing something else down. But what I'm saying is that you absolutely should look for a church that is teaching the Bible, that's faithful to God's word. But don't worry about whether that church is entertaining, right? You should definitely seek a church that teaches sound doctrine, but don't worry about what, like if they're in this particular camp and they're really dogmatic about that, you know, that they have all, like their library is only stocked with the, you know, the right theology or whatever. We absolutely should be people who are pursuing the Holy Spirit and asking him to do mighty works in our area. But don't just get, you know, drawn away by someone who looks like they are doing that. So absolutely look for all those things, but what it should be producing is the fruit of the Spirit. Like as simply as I could say it is like that's why when I say, look for people that are pursuing Jesus in a way that sparks something in you, makes you want to pursue Jesus. Well, I can pretty much guarantee you that that's going to be a church that preaches the gospel. That's going to be a church that's faithful to God's word. That's going to be a church that has sound doctrine, because that's how people are formed into Christ. Like you could find a church that they do life like you'd like to do life, you know, or that they're fun, or that they're really good at serving the poor or something like that. You could find that and not find those other things. But that's why I'm very specific about find people who are pursuing Jesus in a way that sparks something in you to want to pursue Jesus. And then at, when you find that, you're probably going to find those other things, and the fruit that those other things should be producing are pretty clear. And that's what we just want to make sure that we never lose sight of that, so that we don't end up giving ourselves over to other voices, whether that's me or you or somebody else, you know, a Sunday school teacher or a small group leader or a worship leader or just somebody that's sitting in the congregation. It's so tempting. And by the way, just that's usually, and I pulled those things out because that's usually the thing that someone will grab onto to try to cover up for their lack of fruit. They'll figure out whatever that community wants.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're in a community that's really consumeristic and just wants all the things, then the person who is going to do that is going to call that out and be like, yeah, you know, God wants you to have all this stuff, all these things that you wanted, you can have that and follow Jesus. And that's going to be covering up a lack of fruit probably in their life. And the same thing happens in with doctrine or teaching the Bible or any of these things. So I feel like I'm definitely going around in circles in that, but that's part of the fun of the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
But the bottom line is, yes, pursue all those things. And we should, as a church, pursue sound doctrine, teaching the Bible, proclaiming the gospel, asking the Holy Spirit to do those things, do miraculous works. But whether that is actually of God or not is determined by the fruit that it is producing. And Jesus makes that really clear. Just read Matthew 7. Just read it over and over again. Immediately after him warning against false prophets and false teachers, he talks about people who did all these miraculous works. And he says, "Depart from me, I never knew you." So just sound doctrine does not mean it's of God. Just somebody teaching the Bible and saying it's authoritative doesn't mean it's of God. Just someone doing works that seem like they're works in the Spirit does not mean it's of God. Just somebody like serving the poor does not mean it's of God. The question is, what are those works? What is it producing? What's the fruit that's being produced in the lives of the people who are engaged in it? That will help you understand if it's really of God.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, as I just think about the theme in this sermon too, I can't remember what you had it titled, Jay, but I think it was like pursuing holiness together, or it was something about that we're doing this together.
I always give tons of thought to my titles. So yeah, it's probably
Jeff walks up to us after and literally like,
sometimes I ask people who are standing around, if you ever want to name a sermon, just stand around.
Yep.
Find Jeff Bauer on Sunday morning.
And then watch him walk up to us.
Yes, and then like go up there, and I'll probably ask, like, well, what do you think?
It's helpful, actually.
Pursuing holiness together.
Well, I just was thinking, like, trying to get, you know, practical here in this conversation for people. If what this is saying, what this patch is saying, and the way we're, you know, applying it here is resonating with people, and they're feeling like, yeah, I want to do that with other people. What would we say? Like, can we just get practical for a minute about what would that look like if they wanted to start doing that this week? What would we recommend in the next 7 days that they could do practically to pursue this with some other people around them in our church?
Go fishing. And by that, I don't mean actual fishing. somebody, you have to elaborate on that. Yeah, somebody goes like, oh, finally.
They turned it off already. They're like, that's all I needed.
That's all I needed. I'm out. Didn't catch the rest of that. Here's what I hear from a lot of people. And people you'd be surprised. So if you think about our church, everyone thinks everybody else is really connected. Everybody thinks that everybody else has all these deep, rich friendships, and they're the ones that don't. And I know that, and you know that, because we talk to those mm-hmm. people. But if everybody is thinking that, then that actually means everybody's kind of in the same boat. I would say that most people in our church family right now are not walking with people in that kind of deep way that you're talking about. And we are trying to figure out how to help facilitate it. But I would say a place that you can start is go fishing by testing the waters. have a conversation on Sunday, be willing to be awkward and look foolish, to go up to someone and ask them a question like, hey, how has God shown up this week? What are you struggling to believe God in this week? Or what have been some victories in your faith this week? What have you read in the Bible this week that is challenging? And I say fishing because if you did that 10 times, you might get one response from somebody that is like, oh, okay, I got a bite. And just like with fishing, if you cast something out and you don't get it, you don't get a bite, you don't just quit. Like if you took a boat out in the middle of Lake Michigan or Lake Superior, I remember going out fishing on Lake Superior, and you go out there and you go for a while, like if you make a cast and you don't get anything, or you set the line and you don't get anything for a few minutes, you don't just say like, that's it. Lake Superior doesn't have any fish. It's not possible. You wait because you know it's there.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just say, if you're a part of our church family, or even if you're listening to this, and you're not a part of our church family, and you're a part of a church that is preaching the gospel and there is fruit, but it's, you just don't feel like you have that community, I would say it's there. There are other people who feel that same way, and it will be awkward to begin with, and it will mean being rejected. It might surprise people to know that we're in the same boat. This happens a lot with discipling relationships. I know, Jeff, that in campus ministry, you had to do this all the time. You set the line, mm-hmm. and you make the offer. You say, hey, lots of students say they want investment or they want your investment, but who are the ones who are going to show up at 6 a.m. or who are going to respond when you ask them a hard question? They're going to actually respond because they want that. That's a much smaller number. And to find that, you have to go through a lot of people who are going to look at you weird, or people who are going to give you some kind of surface answer, or a person who maybe already, you might hit on a person who does have those relationships and so they don't have the bandwidth for more, because we only have the bandwidth for so much. Like you can't possibly know everyone here on Sunday morning. We are not a huge church, and you could not have deep relationships with everybody in our church family. So that's where I would start in that, is just set your mind of how badly do I want this, and am I willing, and set your expectations that I think 1 out of 10 is probably a pretty good. And I used to say that about evangelism. I used to say like, look, if you knew you're going to go into a room and you're going to share the gospel with 10 people and 9 of them were going to think you were a total fool, but one of them was going to receive it and come to Christ, would you do it? And every time the answer is yes. But our fear is that all 10 times we're going to look like a fool, and we don't like that. Well, I would say the same thing is with the relationships. Like if you set your mind to say, you know what, I want friendships. And the other thing, by the way, I would say is talk to us. We can help you narrow that down of we know a lot of people, and I love connecting people into friendships, and get people into that kind of community. But yeah, I don't know. What would you?
I like that, Jay. I mean, I think we won't have that kind of. I mean, it's friendship with a purpose of following Christ, right? That's what it is, and we won't have it if we don't pursue it. It's just, unfortunately, maybe I think God has designs with it not being always automatic, but unfortunately, it's not automatic. You have to pursue it, and part of pursuing it is asking God to provide it, and so we ask Him, and then we seek it out, and we trust that as we do that, as we fish. He will provide that. And I think part of it is shifting the tenor even of some conversations. Like you and I started this podcast joking about the Brewers and the Cubs. That's awesome. That is a part of friendship. But if that's all we ever did together, people would find that really weird that you and I spend time together and that's all we did, right? They'd be like, you guys don't ever talk about Jesus? That's so weird. You're both pastors here. Yeah, that would be so weird. But unfortunately, that can be what's normal in our, you know, in our surroundings. It can just be that way. So you have to take, I like that you're saying, kind of take that risk. Sometimes another question that you could offer someone that, say you know them on a baseball level, but you want to know them on a Jesus level, is just to start, like as you're talking about things, just say, hey, how can I pray for you this week? I want to pray for you. And just start there and then see what God does with that question. If you ask it in a way that is too upfront, sometimes that people think you mean something you don't. So I would just start like, have a spiritual conversation, make that part of your friendship with each other. And don't, I think sometimes the enemy of Christian community, I think Bonhoeffer said this, Dietrich Bonhoeffer, but the enemy of community is often the ideal of it. And so sometimes our imagination of what it ought to be like prevents us from engaging in what is actually there, which is really good and beautiful. It's this side of heaven. It's not going to be perfect. It's just not. But so I think, yeah, just take a swing, get up to bat. That's another image for you, and ask for help. We would love to help with that. But you, Jane, you and I don't know every single person there every Sunday. We don't. But we know so many, and we know so many stories, and God is moving in people in significant ways. And together, doing this together, what is happening that is significant in your life could help someone else for what's significant in their life, and vice versa. It's a beautiful thing that God has designed and he's orchestrating, and he wants to involve us in it.
By the way, I think that question's better. Like, how can I pray for you? That's, you know, all the other ones, I am delightfully awkward and forward. And so I'll probably ask this. So maybe, because when you ask somebody, how can I pray for you? That's part of the fishing. Cause you'll be able to kind of know based on the responses of, okay, are they really wanting to engage in something deeper? It's a safe way for somebody to open up and share something that they're struggling with or something that, you know. But if you get like a, oh no, I'm good. Okay. Well that's not a bite like that. Mm-hmm. That's somebody that's either, you know, for whatever reason, like they're not responding to that. And that's not a personal rejection of you. It just is what it is. Like, and so you kind of move on, and that's okay. But I think you can, oh God, yeah.
Well, I was just saying, but then there may be, in God's answer to your prayer for the community, someone who gives you an answer and then responds with, and how can I pray for you?
Yeah.
And that is beautiful. Yeah. That is an evidence of God's blessing, his fruit right there. And I would just enjoy that then and just start pursuing that. And yeah, what that might look like is that's the conversation, and you might go days, maybe be a week, and then you come back and say, how did that go?
Yep.
So you follow up. How did it go? I prayed for you. How was that this week? You had this appointment, you had this meeting, you had this thing. How did God answer that? And how can I keep praying? So it part of it is the art of just building friendship, right? And it's relating and caring for each other. But you do it in a way that you alert each other to the reality that you're in God's presence, right? That you belong to him. And so part of it is, I think, a skill that we just need to fine tune in each other. For this cultural moment, that's pretty unique, all the different ways we communicate with each other. But yeah, I would just say, encourage people that God will answer that prayer. You ask him for that, he will answer it, and he will involve you in it. So you're not going to be passive.
Yeah, so I hope people caught that. So you offer to pray and then follow up. Mm-hmm. If it's appropriate, you can give them, you know, you could give them your number and say, hey, I'd love to get an update on that. Or just next Sunday.
Yep.
And then that, you know, that's part of it too, is consistency matters. I mean, I was talking to some young adults about that, of just saying, hey, you all want this community, but the number of times that I've tried to connect people where I'm like, oh, I need to introduce you to this person, and like, oh, they're not here this week. And then the next week it's flip-flopped or whatever. And I get it. Like, that's not a guilt trip or anything. It's just saying, if you really want this community, then being present matters, and making that a point to be present and consistent. It doesn't just happen. It doesn't happen overnight. It's not quick. And then as we're doing that together, you know, it's funny, we don't have time to go into this point, but it was actually a point that it was the first thing I'd written down of saying, we need to talk about this in the podcast, because I didn't really flesh that out very much. So I'll end it this way, or I'll point it out this way. That one of the things that's so striking about this passage in Hebrews is that holiness matters. And I wanted to contrast like the ditches that we fall into where we have the ditch of legalism, where you're like, yes, holiness matters. And so then we become like the Pharisees and the police. And then that means like, well, you only watch certain movies or none at all. And you only, you know, do certain things or whatever. And you live in a certain way. So that's a ditch that we fall into, but that's not truly holiness. That's self-righteousness and moralism. But then the other ditch is that we fall into like, well, yeah, it doesn't matter because Christ is holy and we receive the holiness of Christ. And so like it really doesn't matter. God is just like a-okay with all of our sin. But the reality is that our holiness matters because like the author says, pursue the holiness without which we will not see the Lord Jesus. It's not our perfection. It's not our sinlessness. It's not making up for our sin or for our rebellion, but it is this reality that if we are in Christ, we will continue to be formed like him and our desire to follow him and grow in him will grow. And that is that indicator. It matters. And then as a community, it matters. It's why things like church discipline exist. Because it's saying, look, we are covenanting with each other to pursue this holiness together. And so it matters. And so when a brother or sister gets off course, it is the loving thing to do to invite them back on. And that's where I was trying to, where those kind of come together is what this looks like is as a community, we're covenanting together to run this race together, to pursue holiness together, to run on the path of holiness, the way of Jesus. Knowing we're going to fall off and we're going to veer and we're going to stray, sometimes in small ways, sometimes in big ways, sometimes in ways that only a couple people notice, sometimes in ways that everybody notices because it's public. It happens all the time. And the heart is always a pleading to come back in, an invitation to trust Jesus, to remind each other of the reward that awaits us, not to shame or to call out those things, to like punish the one who sins or anything. That's never the heart of it. And so as we do that together, cultivating a culture where we're doing that, when you see a brother or sister falling into a pattern that is not the way of Jesus, to say, brother, sister, come back. Like what is it that you're pursuing? What is it you think this is going to fulfill? How is it that Jesus actually fulfills that? Like winning them back to the reward that Jesus is offering and that it's better. So what are your thoughts on that? You get a chance to respond to that.
I think what you just said is true, and it is so desperately needed for all of us, because all of us can be lulled to sleep. We can forget what we're here for. We can lose track of what is real about God and about Jesus and about who he made us to be and how we can trust him. And we have to be in it together to have that. You know, we really do need each other and we follow Christ together. And it's amazing to me too. I mean, the number of examples in the Gospels where that's just obvious that we miss, right? That the Lord's Prayer is always our, it's our Father, give us our daily prayer, our daily bread. But then all of the times you hear about his disciples, his apprentices, they're always together in it. They don't always get along, right? There's jostling for position at one point, who's going to be at his right hand, and Jesus teaches them through that. And So I agree with what you're saying. And to me, it's one of the reasons I love being a pastor, is getting to do this with people, to walk closely with them in it and to call people back to him. You know, and that's always our desire, especially you mentioned church discipline. I think some people, when they hear that word, they do think sometimes, well, that's controlling, right? Or whatever. But that's not actually the spirit of it at all. It's a pleading, brother, sister, follow Jesus. Let's follow him together. And it is interesting that in the place in the world that we are situated in, the ditch of legalism has run rampant. It is culturally normal for a lot of people in the area we live. And what we mean by that is almost always related to something external, right? And not heart-oriented, spirit-produced fruitfulness. It's like the way you dress, the way you look, what you listen to, what you drink, what you don't drink, all of those things are the primary thing. And the sad thing is sometimes we can get those things right, whatever the law is, right, that group comes up with, and then totally miss the fruit of the Spirit.
And the tool of formation is shame.
It is. And rejection.
Control and rejection. Those are the tools of formation in that world. You know, it's popular in the pushing back against legalism, it's popular then to say, well, then, yeah, so works don't matter. So it doesn't matter what you drink. It doesn't matter what you watch. It doesn't matter what you... And it's like, no, that's the other ditch. Like, again, we love ditches. We just can't help ourselves. We're like, the safest place from one ditch is the other ditch. And it's just, it's really critical that we look for that. So the legalism, you know, I remember even thinking this of like, oh, that's legalistic to think, you know, you have to have a quiet time every day. Well, having a quiet time every day that then produces arrogance and self-righteousness and is done as a means of like, okay, I have to do this so that I can be okay with God today. That is legalism. But pursuing holiness is going to include wanting to spend time with Jesus every day and connecting with him through his word. And so, but that will produce the fruit of the Spirit. So again, we go back to that idea of we pursue holiness together, but the holiness that we are pursuing is this being sanctified, which means we're going to be produce more and more of the fruit of the Spirit and look more and more like Jesus. And so if you're in a group that is like pursuing holiness and the fruit of that holiness is judgment of others and condemnation and shame and you know, all that, that's not of God. That is not holiness. That is legalism. That is something other. But similarly, if you're in a community that doesn't care about any of that, that is also not holiness. Like that you never think, oh, it doesn't matter what I watch, so I can watch anything. That's a dangerous game to play. But if you're in a group that pursues holiness together and what is good and what is beneficial and what is useful for building up, and in that community, you're finding yourself becoming more loving, more kind, more patient, all these different things as you're pursuing Jesus, that's actually pursuing holiness. So again, that could be a whole other podcast. Maybe it will be, because next week's Worship in the Park, we'll mm-hmm. see. You can let us know if you want us to talk more about holiness, church discipline. What does that look like? How do we win people back onto the path? How do we call out those things? I mean, these are all things that we could discuss. And so if you would like to hear more about that, if you think that would be helpful, let us know. Shoot us an email, talk to us, whatever. Tell us, or if there's other questions or other things that you would like to hear us discuss, if it'd be helpful to hear us discuss. I was thinking, I wish that we had planned it as well as what you're talking about of joking about the Brewers. And we never intentionally did that. When Robbie and I started the podcast, that's just because the whole idea was we're just going to hit record on the conversation we are pretty much always having on a Tuesday morning. And it often starts with nonsense, like an Eddie Vedder impression or whatever. But I didn't even think about the fact that in doing that, we're actually modeling, yeah, you can transition. You don't have to just like throw a fastball right away. But just know that it is a transition, that you like, it's a, you're kind of warming up, and then you're like, but I really want to know how you're doing, mm-hmm. you know, and you and I do this mm-hmm. on, you know, Mondays when we're in here and it's quiet or whatever, any time that we're in here. There will be some of that, of just kind of checking in, kind of some small talk, and then we know things about each other's lives, and so then we ask, like, hey, how did that thing go? Or hey, you know, what was that like? How was, you know, this person feeling? Whatever. Those are really good. Those are just really important interactions. So I guess we're modeling that. And then this thought just pops in my head. So this is a bonus. When you do ask people what you can pray for, by the way, going back to that, another question, usually our prayer requests are very external. So I have this thing coming up. This thing is happening, but asking somebody, oh, okay, I can definitely pray for that. How are you feeling about that?
Mm-hmm.
Like asking people, how do you feel about that? Then you'll actually uncover, are they feeling anxious? Are they feeling excited? Are they feeling at peace? Are they feeling joyful? Are they feeling like, there's lots of different emotions. I've had people say, like, for example, somebody says, oh, I have the surgery coming up. Okay, well, that could mean all kinds of things. Well, how do you feel about that? Oh, I'm really excited because it's going to take care of this issue I've been having. Like, I hope that this is finally going to fix this issue that I'm dealing with. Or I'm feeling really nervous because the last time I had a surgery, it did not go well.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm feeling like very confused why God has, like, why is this happening right now? Like, I'm stressed because these other things are happening. There's so many things that can happen when you just ask somebody really simple, open-ended questions. And that is the fishing thing. Ask simple, open-ended questions and you will, and when you get a real response, then follow up with that. And that's how that community forms. And we want to help you do that. So if we can help, let us know. We are over time, so I'm gonna land the plane.
Sounds good, Jay.
We appreciate you taking the time to listen to this. We hope that it's been helpful to you. Until next time, grace and peace.